From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, it is the eve of the annual March for Life, which not only marks the anniversary of the infamous 1973 Roe versus Wade decision, but it is an annual renewal of our resolve in the march toward bringing America back to a recognition that all life is sacred because it is made in the image of God. And while the pace of this march has sometimes been in question, trust me, we are not just marking time. We are gaining ground, and the evidence, well, it's all around us. In fact, our first guest is evidence of the gains that have been made. In just a moment, I'll be joined by the Vice President of the United States, my good friend Mike Pence. Then later in the program, we'll get an update from Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma on the U.S. Senate's efforts to advance a culture of life as they move forward on the no taxpayer funding for abortion bill. Also, Dr. David Curry of Open Doors USA is here with the 2019 World Watch List, which documents growing persecution of Christians worldwide. The number of Christians experiencing high levels of persecution jumped from 215 million to 245 million worldwide. What's behind the increase? We'll talk about it. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, the March for Life is set for tomorrow here in our nation's capital. It marks the 46th anniversary of the infamous Roe v. Wade decision, which was handed down by the Supreme Court on January 22, 1973, a prime example, by the way, of judicial activism. But the march is also an occasion where we celebrate the inalienable right to life, which is evidenced in the policies and actions of the Trump administration. In fact, in 2017, just 1 week after the inauguration, Vice President Mike Pence made history when he spoke to the hundreds of thousands of Americans gathered at the march. And we're honored now to have the Vice President join us on the eve of the march. Mr. Vice President, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony Perkins, it is great to be back on Washington Watch, and thanks for bringing back some great memories. You know, actually, Karen and I, when our kids were very young, went to our first March for Life nearly 20 years ago, and you're so right. While most of the national media will ignore it, tomorrow on the National Mall, we'll have a throng of tens of thousands of people, especially young people, that are coming out to take a stand for life. And frankly, it was one of the most inspiring things I've ever been involved in, and particularly serving alongside President Trump, the most pro-life president in American history. We have much to celebrate, but we also have much work yet to do. But good to be with you.
Well, Mr. Vice President, you mentioned the president, Donald Trump, who his policies, the policies of this administration, have been a part of advancing that that culture of life. And as we, as I talked about this march to the restoration of the sanctity of life, we're making progress on that journey.
Well, we really are. And you know, your millions of listeners around the country in supporting this pro-life president and also supporting, you know, pro-life majorities in the House and Senate over the past 2 years, it's made it possible for us to make sure no foreign aid dollars go to any organization that, that supports or promotes abortion, the so-called Mexico City policy. I was able to cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate to allow states to defund the largest abortion provider in America, in Planned Parenthood.
By the way, I think, Mr. Vice President, you were, yeah, I think, the first to carry that bill floor when you were in the House of Representatives.
Well, thanks for remembering. You know, my as you know, I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. We've taken a strong stand for life throughout our public career, and will, and frankly, will to our dying day. But for me, a decade ago, I authored the first legislation to defund Planned Parenthood. And while we're not there yet, we are absolutely determined to continue to cut off all funding. The largest abortion provider in America should not be the largest recipient of federal funding under Title X. We've made progress along that way. States can now defund Planned Parenthood, but we're going to stay in the fight for life. And also, we're going to stay in the fight with, you know, you look at the men and women this president has been appointing to our federal courts at every level, principled conservatives who will interpret the Constitution as written. The legislative support that we've had, pro-life majorities in state houses around the country. I really believe in our lifetime, Tony, that we will see the sanctity of life restored to the center of American law. That's my hope. My prayer tomorrow on the National Mall will be calling for that and celebrating the progress we've made.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by Vice President Mike Pence as we're talking about the March for Life that takes place here in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow. You know, the culture is a big part of restoring this sanctity of human life, this understanding of that this is an inalienable right. And we're making progress. The polling shows that, especially among young people of all places, millennials, not in track with the Democratic Party. But as you point out, Mr. Vice President, the courts have played a huge role in this. 46 years ago, they thought they were going to solve this issue by imposing this on the nation. But the American people continue to push back.
Well, they do. And I have to tell you that I believe with all of my heart, not just for the electoral victories of pro-life candidates and this pro-life president, but also just from what I see around the country, life is winning in America. And life is winning more hearts and minds of young people in America every single day. And, you know, I remember speaking at the March for Life years ago, and I said, you know, when you look at the fact that more and more young people are choosing to embrace the sanctity of life, I'm convinced that it's been a result of a movement. It's been a result of people speaking out in the public square, the result of crisis pregnancy centers and their deeply compassionate work, you know, loving young women with, who find themselves in a crisis pregnancy and loving their unborn child. But I also believe, and I've said this, that I also think that in the quiet councils between mothers and daughters and grandmothers and granddaughters, the truth about abortion is being told. And young people are hearing that truth. They're choosing life. And I believe that's why we're seeing the steady progress that we're making. That whatever the national media, and I'll be honest with you, Tony, we know you'll be flipping around the channels tomorrow trying to find some coverage of the March for Life, and you won't find it on much of the mainstream press. But the fact that this movement is growing, support for the right to life is growing, is a testament to the heart and the compassion of the American people.
And I would add to that list of contributing factors is science. I mean, the science is proving what we've known, that that from the moment of conception, that this is a life. It's created, it's unique, and it is worthy to be protected under our laws. And that's proving that. When you can see a snapshot of a baby in the womb, and which is oftentimes the first picture on a refrigerator, we're making progress in science.
Tony, we really are. And in fact, I'm speaking at what's called the Rose Banquet on Friday night. And it's actually the theme this year is pro-life and pro-science. And I'm going to talk about just that, about the fact that the steady advance of science, ultrasound technology, people are seeing that this arbitrary decision written by Justice Blackmun long ago, the anniversary of which we will mark with this March for Life in Roe versus Wade, is not based in science. It's based in politics, but as science advances, as a greater understanding of the unborn advances, I think we'll see the cause of life advance as well.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I know we just got a couple more minutes with you because I know you've got a lot on your plate. You've been working with the president, his direction to try to resolve this current impasse over national security and government funding. Do we see a resolution in sight?
Well, the president has been providing leadership on the issue of illegal immigration since the campaign. I mean, this was an issue that he literally put back at the center of the national debate. As I sit here today, 2 years into this administration, we are literally facing, because Congress has not been willing to act, we're literally facing a security and humanitarian crisis on our southern border. I had a piece in USA Today yesterday that you might want to share with your listeners a link. People can find it easily online. 2,000 illegal immigrants attempt to come into our country every single day. We see, you know, we see this new caravan that has started heading north. Literally, we have a caravan attempt to cross our border illegally every day, and the largest percentage of them ever are now families and unaccompanied minors who are being exploited by human traffickers and the cartels who have them take the long and dangerous journey north. They're often exploited not only physically but financially. They have to give thousands of dollars of cash to make this journey to come into our country illegally. Add to that narcotics. President Trump is absolutely determined. We're going to stand firm until we get the funding to build a wall on the southern border where it's needed, and to support additional border personnel, additional technology. And all that's missing right now is the Democrats. I mean, your listeners deserve to know the president is standing. We canceled all of our Christmas vacation plans. We've been here for the last month every single day, and the Democrats refuse to negotiate until we reopen the government. And the president's just made it clear he's going to stand firm for border security. We want to end this partial government shutdown. The president signed a bill yesterday making sure that all federal employees will get 100% of their back pay. We have great compassion for federal employees that are impacted and their families. But we also have great compassion for 320 million Americans that are facing a crisis of illegal immigration. And we're going to stand firm. People are being, you know, not only the American people are losing without secure borders, but frankly, vulnerable families south of our border are being exploited by human traffickers. President Trump and I are determined to bring this to a resolution, solve the crisis, reopen the government, and make real progress for our country.
Well, and I think, I know for our listeners, they applaud the president's resolve on this issue of solving this humanitarian crisis on the border. Vice President, I know we got to go here, but your wife and our teacher has been the target of critics this week, along with the Christian school where she's teaching part-time, because that school believes the Bible. I mean, are you concerned about this effort to marginalize people of faith that's going on in our culture right now?
Well, you know, you and I have known each other a long time. And, you know, Karen and I have been in and around public life for almost two decades. And so, to be honest with you, we're used to the criticism. But the attacks on Christian education by the mainstream media have got to stop. I mean, we cherish the freedom of religion in this country. This administration stands foursquare for the freedom of religion of people of all faiths. And to see the mainstream media criticize my wife because she's choosing to return to the classroom of an elementary Christian school is wrong. Again, the attacks on Christian education must end.
Mr. Vice President, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, please convey our appreciation to the president for the resolution that you have shown in standing for that religious freedom. We're grateful for it.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right, folks, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. When we come back, Dr. David Corey of Open Doors USA joins us. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you with us. Yesterday, we made reference to the Open Doors USA watch list report. Yesterday, obviously, we talked a lot about religious freedom as Religious Freedom Day, but Christian persecution worldwide is getting worse. According to the 2019 World Watch List compiled by Open Doors International, almost half, 73, of the 150 countries monitored showed extreme, very high, or high levels of persecution. 245 million Christians experienced high levels of persecution in those 73 countries. That's up from 215 million in 58 countries in the previous year. Joining me now in studio on Washington Watch is Dr. David Curry. He is the president and CEO of Open Doors USA. For over 60 years, Open Doors has worked in the world's most oppressive countries, empowering Christians who are persecuted for their beliefs in more than 60 countries. David, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
Well, it's good to see you here in Washington, D.C., and once again appreciate the work that Open Doors does on behalf of persecuted Christians. And by the way, folks, you can go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and find links to Open Doors. This is one of those ministries that is worthy of your support. Our family supports Open Doors. I would encourage you to do the same. We're seeing an increase in the persecution of Christians worldwide. What is driving this, David?
Well, there's a number of factors driving it. The first is the rise of authoritarian tactics against Christians in Asia and around the world. Let me give you a couple of examples. Countries like Vietnam and China are passing rules which want to restrict the practice of Christian faith, and in some cases, eliminate it. That's what you certainly see in North Korea and so forth. But China's an interesting case because you talked about those 245 million believers who live under high or severe persecution. A good chunk of them are in China. What they're doing that's unusual is they're using technology, now with facial recognition, to pressure churches. They had a church shut down in Beijing in September because the church refused to put cameras on their pulpit. They knew that the Communist Party wanted to watch the Christians. Who's coming? Why are they coming? No one under the age of 18 can come to church anymore in some of these situations. So China is a big factor in that authoritarian regime tactics used against Christians. But there's a bunch of reasons there. Another one would be Islamic extremism, of course.
Let me go back to China for just a moment. Yesterday we had Congressman Chris Smith of New Jersey on the program. He's actually a frequent guest. He's focused like a laser on China right now. China, I mean, they're moving rapidly in the wrong direction. It's not, I mean, we've almost grown accustomed to hearing bad things about China when we talk about human rights and religious freedom, but it's reached a new level.
It really has, because they've consolidated power behind their Xi Jinping, and he has shifted the monitoring of churches and Christian activity over to the Communist Party. They're not taking that power in order to give it back or to bless the people. They want to try to force out Christians. I think we, our research proves there's more Christians now than there are members of the Chinese Communist Party. That frightens them to death.
They feel threatened by that.
They want to consolidate power. So they're going to do everything they can to try to force Christians into their mold. I think they're happy at the positive influence that Christians have in society. Divorce rates are lower.
Right.
All of
productivity
is good. Productivity. But what they want to do is try to make them bow down to the communist dogma. And churches are saying, we love our country. We're not going to do that.
Yeah, see, that's it's like the old fable, the goose that laid the golden egg. They see the byproduct of Christianity and how it's beneficial, but they don't understand the core of that is that because people, as they worship Jesus Christ, everything they do brings glory to him. And it's not, it can't be replicated when you place the party in place of the Lord Jesus Christ.
You're absolutely right. There is no moral teaching within communism that's going to help China solve some of their issues of corruption and
right.
so forth. And so Christianity obviously has that moral structure in the teachings of Jesus, but they want to change the theology in some cases. You've seen Pastor Yi arrested in December of this year because he wouldn't change the theology to kowtow to the communist system.
And we were discussing briefly yesterday again with Congressman Smith that they're wanting to write their own Bible to replace the Word of God with something that complements communism.
That's right. They want to pick and choose what suits them. And of course, other people throughout history have tried that, and the Bible remains true over time.
How repressive is the Chinese regime when it comes to Christians?
Well, it's becoming more repressive, and certainly half of the 100 million believers in China are under high levels of persecution. That's significant. That's where that big leap comes this year in the statistical data, is that you have a big jump up to about half of the Christians now affected, where it was probably 25-30%
right.
last year.
Even the state-sanctioned churches now are coming under scrutiny.
It was always a questionable, dangerous game the state churches are playing, getting their sermons checked with the
right.
with headquarters and this kind of thing. They seem to have some autonomy. It was never clear exactly how much. Now that seems to be going away. And I think if China is dedicated to using technology to breach the privacy and sanctity of the congregation, that's a non-starter, I think, as far as human rights and freedom of religious expression.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, Dr. David Curry, my guest. He's with Open Doors USA talking about the World Watch List that was just released this week, highlighting the increase in the persecution of Christians around the globe. Right, you mentioned some of the Islamic countries. I mean, I think 8 of the top 10 countries on the watch list, it's driven by the radical Islam.
Yeah, that's still a factor. It continues to grow because the ideology is still in place. Interesting within that, though, is the spread to sub-Saharan Africa. 4 of the top 10 are now in Africa, and that is going to continue to be something to watch. You have Somalia, Eritrea, Nigeria. So many people killed for their faith in Nigeria, over 3,700 that we know of.
Nigeria is a particularly troubling country because you have a population that is almost evenly split, 50-50, 50% Islamic, 50% Christian. That country looks ripe for a civil war.
It really does, and the government has been so slow to respond. You have Islamic groups from in different ways. You have Fulani herdsmen, which is sort of a tribal Islamic group. You have Boko Haram. These are battling.
David, we've got to hold it right there. We're up against a break. I want to finish that on the other side of this break. Folks, you're listening to Washington Watch. Dr. David Curry, my guest, talking about the World Watch List 2019 that was just released this week. We're going to finish our conversation with David on the other side of this break. Stick around. Don't go away. You want to hear what's next.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad that you have joined us. The website, tonyperkins.com. In fact, you can go to the website, and we've got a link there to the 2019 World Watch List that is compiled by Open Doors International, again, reviewing almost half, 73 of the 150 countries monitored show extreme, very high, or high levels of persecution. 245 million Christians experiencing high levels of persecution in those 73 countries. All right, David, before the break, we were talking about Nigeria, right. A country, in my view, as I've looked at it, ripe for civil war. You're talking about the kind of the conflict between the Fulani herdsmen and the Christians there, and there is a lot of tension in that country.
There really is. You've got the Fulani group, which the president of Nigeria is part of that tribe. He sees himself as part of that tribe. They've been, of course, then slow to correct them when they've been attacking these villages, which are full of Christians. Then you have the Islamic State-type group, Boko Haram. They've been attacking. Here's the issue, even beyond the civil war that could happen as that clash of civilization happens in the middle of Nigeria. It's now leaping over. Boko Haram is extending their territory into Cameroon, of course, into Niger. They keep running back and forth across borders. This could become an even bigger challenge unless Nigeria and some of the African states begin to understand how this kind of cancer can spread.
Let's talk two other countries, massive countries in terms of size. India, a huge country, they're having some real issues.
You know, I grew up caring about missionaries that went to India. I never understood persecution in India the way I do today. And I think it's grown, especially over the last 5 years, because the BJP party, which is the ruling party now for the last 5 years, Prime Minister Modi, has a radical Hindu agenda, a nationalistic point of view that says Christians are not really Indians. Now, there's 64, maybe more than this, 64 million Christians who love India. They are awesome citizens, but they're being told, you're not part of our future unless you become a Hindu. This is going to be a big challenge. It's meant that there's impunity on those people that have mob violence against churches, and there's been hundreds of attacks that we document against pastors. Obviously Christian ministries are being shut down. People who are Christians need to reshape the way they see India. It's not peaceful towards Christians. It's not peaceful towards human rights right now. And I think the international community needs to speak out on this, particularly businesses and government, because there are businesses like Apple and Amazon, all these people, they want to do business with that giant economic power. Yeah. And we're making deals in order to try to maintain regional stability, but we've got to ask them about this human rights issue.
Let me just be clear on that point. You know, we've been talking, and primarily we talk about the government in terms of the United States government, this administration, interjecting religious freedom and human rights into its trade negotiations. But you're talking about corporations, that this should be a part of their doing business with these countries. They should be concerned about human rights.
They need to look at their corporate charters and see what it says about doing business in countries that discriminate against others to the degree that India is doing right now to Christians. We have corporate leaders like Sundar Pichai from Google, Indira Anui, who is former CEO of Pepsi, Satya Nadella, Microsoft. These are Indian folks who are important American business people. They need to speak out and say, look, we will not stand for India being a violator of human rights on this level.
Are there any bright spots?
There are some bright spots. Bahrain has dropped off the top 50 of the world watch list, and I think what you're seeing there is perhaps a model of how this could be done, because you have a royal family and a government that are making the right steps. It may not be perfect, but they're doing the right things. They're creating safe places for people, not just Christians, but for other faiths as well, to worship. They're creating opportunity for people, and it's benefiting their whole society. You now have a woman as the head of the parliament, and there's more freedom for them. So it's doing the right things. I think that's a bright spot.
Okay, almost out of time. Our listeners, what can they do? What do Christians in America need to be doing?
Well, first and foremost, we need every church, every Sunday, praying for the persecuted church. That is going to be the game changer. When we care so much that we're willing to take a moment to pray for countries, regions, people, whatever is stirring your heart, I think that's critically important. And then we've got to let our voice be heard as we've never have before for speaking out against persecution of Christians, whether it be here or elsewhere.
And folks can get a copy of this report for themselves and see firsthand the significance of this by going to your website.
By going to our website, and there's stories and videos so you can connect with the people, because behind it all, these real stories of people who are being affected.
All right. David, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you. As always,
great to have you on the program, and appreciate the great work that you are doing at Open Doors.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Tony, for what you do.
All right, folks, visit the website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about this year's report, the World Watch List, by Open Doors International. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more Washington Watch right after this.
The world on our horizon is like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Hey, I hope I might be able to get to the phone lines in this final segment. We'll see. But there's so much going on here in D.C. that you need to know about. And I want you to hear from the newsmakers themselves, not the fake news. Speaking of fake news, earlier in the program, we were talking with the vice president about the attacks on his wife. Some of them coming from the media. If you'd like to send her a message of support, I want to encourage you to go to the website right now, unless you're already, you get our my alerts. But there's a petition, a prayer petition, actually, on the website, TonyPerkins.com. And it's you can send a note saying that you're praying for her. In fact, during the break, I told the vice president that we were going to do this and send it over to him so that he could share that with her. And he was very encouraged by that. Look, this is beyond the pale, simply attacking her because she is volunteering at a Christian school that happens to believe the Bible. If you haven't heard about the story, go to TonyPerkins.com. We've got it up there. In fact, you need to sign up for my update. I have a bigger story about this in my update today. This is a good reason to get the Stand Firm app. This stuff will come to you automatically. So do that while you're at TonyPerkins.com. Okay. Earlier this afternoon, the Senate voted on the no taxpayer funding for abortion bill. We discussed this on Tuesday with Senator Roger Wicker of Mississippi. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell opened the debate for the bill on the Senate floor. And here's a portion of his speech from earlier today.
75% of all Americans, including more than 60% of those who call themselves pro-choice, support more protection for the lives of unborn children. The far left is wedded to the most extreme positions on this subject. For example, the radical left wants America to remain one of only seven countries in the entire world, including China and North Korea, who allow elective abortions to occur after 20 weeks, and even after the child is capable of feeling pain. The American people, however, know better. That survey also found that a majority of Americans oppose taxpayer-funded abortion. So I'm proud today to stand with that majority of Americans and urge every member of this body to join me in supporting the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion Act this afternoon.
Well, joining me now on the Washington Watch Hotline is Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, one of the lead sponsors of the No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion bill. Senator Lankford serves on the Committee on Finance, the Committee on Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs, and the Committee on Appropriations. Senator Lankford, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony, always great to be with you. Thanks for standing up for the Vice President's bride today and speaking out on that issue, and thanks for continuing to be able to speak out on the issue of life.
Well, this is a big week for life, and, you know, when I was talking to the Vice President, I said, you know, this has been 46 years. It's been a march to try to move America back to a point where it embraces the sanctity of human life. And sometimes we wonder if we're just marking time, making a difference, but we are making a difference. And, you know, the No Taxpayer Funding of Abortion bill, the speeches like yours, the majority leader and others, this is making a difference. We're very close to seeing America becoming a predominantly pro-life nation again.
Yeah, this is winning hearts and minds, this is what the pro-abortion folks said decades ago, that this is a settled issue from the Supreme Court. Everyone just move on because it's settled, and America has not moved on. America continues to be able to look at a child and count fingers and toes and see unique DNA and hear the cry of the child and think, that doesn't look like just meaningless tissue to me. That looks like a child. And so Americans continue to be able to see what is obvious to the naked eye. And that child has value and worth and needs to be spoken for.
All right, Senator, give our listeners an update on what took place on the Senate floor just a little bit ago as the bill was voted on.
So as many Americans know, the United States Senate has a rule that if you're going to start debate on a bill, you have to get 60 people to agree to begin that process of debate. We had 48 that had agreement to start debate on No Taxpayer Funding, 47 that opposed. We had 5 people that were actually out of town that missed the vote today. So we had the majority of the votes actually get onto it, but not a 60 number to actually start debate. And so as odd as it sounds, we are not able to open formal debate about a No Taxpayer Funding for Abortion, though that hasn't stopped us from getting to the floor and actually speaking about this issue over and over again, and we'll continue to do that. But we put it on the floor, we get the message, we get people on the record, and we continue to affirm again. Here are the folks that really speak out for the most basic thing, that is, we may agree or disagree on the life issue, but we should agree that taxpayer funds should not be diverted to take the life of individual. Healthcare dollars protect life. Abortion takes life. And so this is certainly not a healthcare issue. This is something very, very different. And so we should use our funds to protect life.
Well, and as the clip we took from the Senate Majority Leader, overwhelmingly, almost every poll I have seen for years has shown that a majority of Americans, even those who would call themselves pro-choice, still do not believe that taxpayers should be forced to fund abortion.
That is correct. Overwhelmingly, Americans agree you shouldn't force someone to use their taxpayer dollars to be able to take the life of children. It gets an even higher number. The last number I saw was about 75% of Americans do not believe that we should use foreign aid to pay for foreign abortions or promoting abortions overseas. That is not allowed by the Trump administration, but the previous Obama administration did use tax dollars to be able to fund abortions overseas and promoting abortions overseas. So there's a real stand that's out there from the American people. They see it. American people overwhelmingly do not want late-term abortions. They don't want federal funding be used for foreign abortions. They don't want federal funding used for abortions in America. And so the common ground areas that we have, we should move on those things and continue to be able to speak out.
And I know, Senator Lankford, all those points were made today in the debate on the Senate floor, and I just hope that Nancy Pelosi, as she was trying to catch her plane, heard that, because the House, under her leadership, is moving to do the exact opposite.
They are. The first thing the House sent over, literally the first day they were voting, was a repeal of the foreign abortion funding. They want to go back to mandating that we allow foreign abortions and a federal funding for that. We're talking the very first day of the House of Representatives when they get organized during the shutdown time. Their vote to send over something to be able to end the shutdown included abortion funding for foreign abortion. So that tells you just how radical this new group in the House really is.
And you've quite effectively, and I think articulately made, drawn some comparisons between the way we will move heaven and earth to protect animals, which I'm all for.
Sure.
But yet, when it comes to babies, we can't bring ourselves to do that.
Yeah, I spoke on the floor earlier this week, trying to just make a simple statement about life and some things that are fairly obvious. And I had a picture of a child that was a newborn child that was premature with three doctors around. The umbilical cord is still attached just that instant after the delivery of the child. And to realize, okay, at this moment, you do plus or minus 30 seconds, and this is going to be very different. If they pull that child out of the womb, it's a child. If they leave it in the womb and destroy it, it's just tissue. And when you see that image, there's no question that's a premature child, but there's also no question that's a child. And so we try to just be able to focus on the obvious. And the same issue, if you have a golden eagle egg or a marine turtle egg, if you destroy that egg or even disturb that egg, it's a $100,000 fine. Because we understand, though it's an egg, that is life that's there, and that's life that we're trying to protect. I jokingly said in the speech, if what we see in the womb right now was actually on the planet Mars, we would no question say there's life on Mars. But we could acknowledge there's life on Mars, but we can't acknowledge that's life in the womb.
Good point. Good point. I mean, it at some point, the hypocrisy that we see, I mean, I have to think that the majority of Americans see through that. And there is, I believe, coming a day when we will see the unborn once again welcomed into the world and protected under our laws. And as I was talking with the vice president earlier, you know, it is winning the hearts and minds, and we're making tremendous progress there. But you have to look at the role the courts have played. It was the court that 46 years ago imposed this scheme on America, and it's been the court that has preserved it.
That is correct, and that's the one thing that everyone needs to remember, that long-term this is a court issue, because prior to Roe v. Wade in January the 22nd, 1973, each state chose, and the vast majority of the states chose, no, we're going to protect the life of children. A few states did allow abortion, and it moved from a few states to every state had to do it based on that decision from the court, and then the court continues to be able to protect it from that time on. There was no congressional vote in 1973 that created abortion rights. The courts did that, and I do believe that we will win this, and it's continuing to win the hearts and minds. We as a nation at one point said African Americans were only three-fifths of a person, that they really didn't count as a full person. We've moved past that because of the persistence and faithfulness of the generation behind us to say that is absurd. At one point, we interred Japanese Americans in prison camps simply because they were Japanese. We've moved past that and have learned from that. At one point, we as a nation did not allow women to vote. We have said that's absurd, and I can't believe we ever did that as a nation. We continue to be able to speak to people to say there will be a time that we will all admit the obvious, that child is a child.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Thursday afternoon. Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma, my guest. Senator, I failed to mention at the beginning in the introduction, you were also the chairman of the Senate Values Action Team, which is kind of the I don't want to say the moral conscience of the Senate, but you drive those values issues in the Senate. With the turnover in the House, where the majority now switching to the Democratic Party and those issues now being lost in the House, really the focus shifts to the Senate. You are really leading the charge now when it comes to values. What might we be anticipating to see in the near future?
So we take that very seriously. Some of the members that lost in the House were some really great, solid pro-life members that were taken out by some fairly radical individuals that are radically for pro-abortion. And so there is a real shift that has happened on the House side. several things that we're working very hard to be able to make clear in our communication with the president and the vice president to make sure that any bill that even gets close to their desk, that even threatens to have anything on changes, on protections of life, things like foreign abortions or American money, tax money being used for abortions, that they would veto that. So a whole group of us put together a letter to the president and say, put out a veto threat right away to be able to make it clear to everyone that's trying to threaten this from the House that that is a non-starter. We'll continue to be able to focus in on so many life protections that have been won over the years to make sure we protect that. It will be exceptionally difficult to win life votes at this point with a House of Representatives that is so radically pro-abortion, but we can be clear to make sure we protect where we are right now and continue to win hearts and minds in between.
Now, one of the things that the Senate did for Barack Obama when he was president, I think Barack Obama only issued maybe one, maybe two vetoes, is that the Senate Democrats were really the backstop for him. Do you see the Republicans playing that role for the president where these will not make it through the Senate, the bad stuff coming over from Nancy Pelosi?
Oh, I absolutely believe that. That's been a conversation I've already had with Leader McConnell to make sure that we're protecting the life issues and the family issues, that those don't work their way through the Senate. No matter what the negotiations are, those are non-negotiables. So my goal is really a belt and suspenders, is that it never works its way through the Senate. And if it were to get through the Senate, the president's clear to make sure he's going to veto it. So trying to get both on record to be able to say this is who we are and we will not be moved from this is helpful to us just in our negotiations.
Very good. Senator James Lankford, as always, great to have you on the program, and thank you for your leadership on these core issues, which I believe are defining of who we are as Americans.
Well, thank you again for continuing to press this out, and pray for some very cold young men and women that are out doing a March for Life tomorrow in a very cold, cold time in Washington, D.C., but they are standing up for life and making their voices heard.
That's right, and I'll be out there with him, as I know you will as well. Senator James Lankford, thanks so much.
You bet. Thank you.
All right, folks, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, if you want more, and you can follow the links over and find out more about Senator Lankford. And again, let me encourage you to go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and take the pledge to pray for Second Lady Karen Pence. And I'm going to share that with her and with the vice president. Let him know that you're standing with him. Look, this is about, I hope you'll get my update piece today that I wrote, because I really explain where this is going. It's critically important that we not allow Orthodox Christian faith, believing that the Bible is the authoritative word of God, to be pushed to the margins of society and treated as if it were something that needed to be quarantined. We must live our faith with grace, but with boldness, with meekness. That is strength under control. And so anyway, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and sign that pledge. Also, the vice president wanted us to put up a piece that he had in USA Today. That's on the website as well, about the humanitarian crisis on the southern border, as well as the Open Doors USA, their 2019 World Watch List. Be praying for the persecuted around the world. And by the way, tune in tomorrow morning here at FRC. We're going to be doing the Pro-Life Con. That is prior to the march, beginning 8:30 Eastern time. You can join us online. Go to frc.org and participate with thousands of pro-lifers around the world in tomorrow's activities here in Washington, D.C. All right, folks, out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.